Welcome to Right Spokane Perspective with your host, Tim.
And Shannon.
It's opinion, fact, information, and your alert system. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. And welcome to Right Spokane Perspective on this Tuesday with Simi Bird episode here on Right Spokane Perspective. We're going to be talking about the gubernatorial race, of course. He's running for Washington State Governor. And oftentimes people speak a lot of words, but their actions tell us more truth about what they're going to do than words. And we find that with politicians a lot. And folks, we are a listener-supported show. We bring a lot of candidates to you. So go to RightSpokanePerspective.com to keep the show on the air, because we do not accept money from political campaigns. We accept money from individuals so that we can get the message out, so that we can make informed decisions when it comes time to vote and when it comes time to tell our government how to do the right thing. It is election season basically already, because we've got a primary for statewide offices, and obviously the House of Representatives is running. Today we have Simi Bird, candidate for Washington State Governor, with us today. And, you know, it's going to be actions that speak louder than words with all of these candidates. Hopefully when we make that decision and get them elected, that they do something. We are facing a major crisis in our state on many fronts. When we're talking about the opioid crisis, when we're talking about just despair, and also the rising taxes and burdens on us as citizens. So I'm going to have Simi Bird jump on in the conversation, because you've been on the show before, so we don't have to reintroduce you to the listeners. They can go back and listen to that podcast if they want to grab that for our first interview. But you've been on the campaign trail. What have you been hearing and experiencing that you will need to be doing as governor if elected?
I don't even know where to start. It's a laundry list of trauma to the citizens of the state, the lawlessness, the homelessness, the economy, and the unaffordability of housing. Where to start? Education. We are in a simple, well, not even simple, my friend. It's literally, we have an administration which has created a series of problems. They perpetuated the problems and they sustain the problems, almost as if they're creating these industrial complexes for homelessness and lawlessness and education, et cetera.
Well, and I say, so the listeners know on this show, because I say it pretty continuously, that we're subsidizing the crisis. We're subsidizing the opioid epidemic, and we're not holding people accountable, and we're tying the hands of law enforcement. At the same time, we just had to have the legislature pass a bill to refund the farmers, because our governor decided to put heavier taxes on our farmers through the Climate Commitment Act, like what happened to our gas prices that he lied about, right? So all these crises are created by our state government.
You're tracking. That's exactly it. And on that, where they say it's just, maybe it's going to be pennies or even less than, well, certainly it wasn't. And those farmers and those over-the-road haulers were supposed to be held exempt. They weren't supposed to be dinged with that increase in fuel prices, but yet they were, apparently, because now they're trying to give that money back. It's not going to be right. It needs to be repealed is what needs to happen. And so, again, people are waking up and they're seeing it. You're seeing this in Seattle, Washington, with the homeless crisis. It's getting exponentially out of control. But yet they continue to tax us, and citizens are fed up. Even the Seattle City Council moved towards the right because they were fed up. So where do we start? I could pick any one of those subjects and give you a rendition of how fed up they are. But let's just start with, we were talking about the Climate Commitment Act. This climate change ideology that they're bringing forward, the natural gas law that they're putting forward, the bill that says now on the west side of the state, they're going to rule out, or they have ruled out, the use of natural gas. You can no longer have natural gas use. So there goes those appliances. So now imagine all the citizens who cook with natural gas, they have to be replaced with electric.
Or heat their house. That's the most expensive piece there.
Oh, 100%.
Well, then if your furnace goes bad, do you have to switch out the whole system at the cost of $20,000 to $50,000?
Absolutely. And so these are the same individuals that were receiving Puget Sound Energy notices, please ease up on your electrical use because we're under a cold spell. But yet they just eliminated the alternative to electricity, which is clean burning natural gas and said no more. Not only that, on one hand, we're claiming that we have a housing cost issue, but yet they just raised the cost of housing again because they just took away natural gas.
Well, and you look at all of these things, affordable. You know, two decades ago, the government was subsidizing the transition from electric utility, like your hot water heater, your heating system in your home. They were subsidizing people to switch those out because it was more efficient, more effective. And like you said, when there's a cold spell or it's really hot and people are using their AC, then they have a shortage of electricity. The other thing we subsidize is the purchase of electric cars. But then when we have those situations happen of extreme temperatures, they say, oh, avoid plugging in your electric car. Now we're going to, you know, burden the electric grid more. These people are making insane decisions. And it's not just something that's going to cost us more money. In a lot of cases, it's going to cost people's livelihoods. It's going to cause pipes to freeze. It's going to cause all sorts of despair because people won't be able to afford to live. Because like you said, all of these things are just going to make it more unaffordable to buy a home, own a home, own a series of homes if you're a landlord. And so every politician that says affordable housing, every time they say that phrase, and all the listeners on the show know that a politician saying affordable housing means the opposite. Their policies are going to be more unaffordable.
That's exactly it. And so this is exactly why citizens should look at the individuals that they're going to be voting for. What is their resume for change? This is a job application. Forget this whole campaign and election, and think of it as a job application. I'm a person with a resume, with a background of experience to get into a position. What is my knowledge? What is my experience? Human resources, projects, capital projects, project management, contracts, acquisitions. I can go down the laundry list. And I say this from a position of humility, simply this: I'm not a one-trick pony. And so for my voters or for the citizens of Washington State, I'm going into a service position. They are my clients. They are my customers. They are who I work for. Understanding that, my job is to create value for them, not tax them more, but to look for a way to give tax relief back to them. And so as a professional in organizational structure and performance improvement, simply this: day one, we are going to call for a third-party audit of all state programs, all state offices, because we're going to stop this tax and spend nonsense. We're going to stop creating or approving and signing these bills that do more harm to our citizens than good.
And I've got to, you know, comment on that too, because one of the things about a lot of these bills, every bill that spends money, it creates a government program because it's spending money. Then the auditor's offices at the county, state level, they will audit these government programs when it has to do with government grants. They send grants basically to municipalities, to nonprofits, whatever it is. And I've read so many reports, and I know this is really boring and lame for someone to admit that they've read these reports, but every time I've read an audit of state government spending, they say at the end of these audits that, you know, the conclusion was that there was issues of control of funding because there was money that was placed into multiple group or groupings to different entities. So it's hard to tell how much public money was used with private resources in specific areas. So basically they're not accounting for the money.
That's exactly it. Line item allocation of funds. Everything should have a code. And most people won't know this. And again, career politicians don't know this, because they've never done it. They've never done ledgering. They've never done budgeting.
Well, I don't think any of them read the audits. When they put in these legislation and you have the executive branch that's supposed to be overseeing this, they don't ever, you know, they'll ask for these agencies to come back and give them a report because they've got to, you know, put more funding into whatever it is. But nobody's reading those reports. They're not looking at them. And unless you have a third party, like you say, that's actually fully auditing and saying, hey, this doesn't pass muster.
100%. 100%. And then there's the other thing. is that their new governor, our new governor, which God willing will be me, I know how to read those. I've done this for my clients as a consultant, a behavioral scientist and business consultant for large corporations and small. This is what I used to do for a living. So that is the difference. We are going to bring common sense back to how we run our state, and we're going to run it more effectively, more efficiently, which means that we're going to save billions of dollars so that we can stop penalizing our citizens for dysfunction of government and start giving that money back to them where it belongs. So we're going to put a tax freeze on increases to our citizens. No more tax increases for our first term in office. And the only reason I'm saying that is because I know that we'll be giving money back within our first term in office. So this is a signal to our legislators. Don't bring anything to my desk to sign that imposes an increase to our citizens of Washington State, because I'm not going to sign it.
Well, we see no that more. Here in the city of Spokane. They're talking about putting more taxes on the ballot because our city's budget is in crisis. We're talking about a giant hole in the budget. And these politicians that run and they say, oh, there's a better way. The better way always seems to be taxing us more. And they talk about, you know, transforming the systems and, you know, rebuilding. I want to actually look at the newspaper article from our mayor in the city of Spokane, basically looking for long-term structural reform. But that structural reform just means tax increases. They never cut a single budget line item, and all of the things they ran on when they run for office, they campaign on, get worse while they're in office, just like our governor. We have more crime, we have more poverty, higher taxes, we're spending more on education than we've ever spent in all of history, we're spending more on education than almost every state in the country, we have the least amount of officers per 1,000 residents than every state in the country. I think there's need for structural reforms, but the same old tax and spend plan is not going to work. So we're going to have to take a break, and I want to come back with you because I do want to talk about our governor's decisions in the past that have demonized the police, the legislature. We've handcuffed the police, and we just lost a state patrol officer here recently. And I think that that's partially our governor's fault, and I'll come back from the break and explain why and ask you to answer on that question, how you would handle our state law enforcement and enforcing the law in our state. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Right Spokane Perspective. On this Tuesday episode, we are talking to Simi Bird, candidate for Washington State Governor, and I want to talk about Tyranny Tuesday. And it's not tyranny for the criminals, it's tyranny for the law-abiding citizens. We jumped off into the break, and I was talking about crime in our state. You know, folks, we had a governor that his transportation department and law enforcement officials, they sent these huge campaigns out there, and they talked about zero deaths on our highways. It's called Project Zero. And in his capacity as governor, under current Governor Inslee, we have had the largest increase of deaths in this state due to drunk drivers, all sorts of pedestrian accidents, illegal aliens. And we just recently lost a state patrol officer because a criminal illegal alien who has been known by law enforcement in the United States found sanctuary in Washington State because of our governor's policies and the legislature's policies coming out of Olympia. So Simi Bird, tell us what your thoughts on that matter are.
Well, I'll first start off by saying my condolences to Trooper Chris Gadd's family, one of my dearest friends. This was her nephew and another one. I live in Eastern Washington now, and my friend is on the peninsula, but in Eastern Washington. I also worked with the United States Department of Energy with another Gadd family member. And so the Gadd family, their loss spans across the state. It hurts. And it was personal to me because it was personal to them, and they are close to me. This is a trooper who was hit by an illegal immigrant with a record who shouldn't have been here, who was under the influence. And we have this policy in Washington State that is a sanctuary state. By the way, I will end day one as soon as I become governor. We will no longer be a sanctuary state. But yet we don't cooperate with ICE. We create this sanctuary where we have illegal criminals operating in Washington State. It's wrong.
We actually had a governor where we have a governor currently that went after state patrol officers for doing their job when we've got drug cartels running between your city, Tri-Cities, your cities, my city, Spokane, Yakima. We've got, it's known by the federal government and state law enforcement that the drug cartels are doing human trafficking, drug trafficking.
I was going to say, because that's not the only thing. Did you know Washington is sixth place for the highest human trafficking state in all of the United States? Yeah, we are number six.
Number six out of 50. Yeah, and we're winning races that you would not like to be in.
Yeah. Oh, no. See, and again, this is the difference. I'm very familiar. You know, we have multiple cartels operating in Washington State, and I'm familiar. Why? Because I work counter-narco-terrorism in relation to South and Central America, stationed with Special Operations Command South, which deals with that from the Caribbean through South and Central America, which again operates all up and down the West Coast and throughout the United States of America. Spokane actually is a hub location for the Sinaloa cartel, and people don't talk about that.
Well, so, they haven't talked about it in a long time, and I used to do this show with a former city council member. He talked about it. He got demonized by the left and people that, you know, there's so much money going on, and people don't realize that the underbelly of our economy, there is money being made by folks, very bad folks in my opinion, but there's money in what's going on. That's why we're spending so much in all these different areas, whether it's education, law enforcement, the homeless issue. But you look at many of the troubles across all of our state budgets, and there's a, basically you could go through a budget line item and say, this cost is so high because of the proliferation of drugs and crime in our communities, whether it's in education, law enforcement, or any other places, human services, you name it, right?
100%. And again, there's a correlation there. And so when you have out of control lawlessness, we're number three in the nation for auto theft. Again, as you say, we're on charts that we don't want to be on. So the correlation to that and cost and affordability of living will directly to risk. Our insurance is going through the roof. And because theft, property crime is up 73%.
Well, and who's fencing? So there
is housing.
Who's fencing all this stolen goods? Oh, yeah. So, of course, our housing is more expensive because we got to pay more in homeowner's insurance or renter's insurance. But it's interesting, like you said just a moment ago, that no one's talking about Spokane being a hub for the drug cartels, because it's not just a hub for the drug cartels for the drugs. It's also a hub for human trafficking.
It is.
That's because we're a major city, you know, the largest city between, I think, Seattle and Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a huge market, a hub for all that, but it's not just those things. I mean, it trickles into all the other areas, you know, the human services cost, educational cost, because the drug cartels, even though they're illegally here, their students are enrolled in our schools. So there's costs there. But when you talked about the number three for car theft, I found out something interesting about that, because I thought, are they just cutting up these stolen cars and selling the parts? What are they doing? No, actually, the drug cartels have access to shipping companies that are shipping to other countries our vehicles that they're stealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So remember, we're a port state.
It's organized crime.
Exactly. And anyone who's ever worked counterterrorism understands that counterterrorism and criminal organizations operate hand in hand. So when I was tracking terrorists or high value targets, often it was hand in hand, and people would pop up on the same list, terrorist watch list, that are either cartel heads or crime syndicate leaders. So again, we go after the same people. We use the same techniques. Where do you get that knowledge? Well, from actually doing it. Human traffickers, those are syndicate leaders that operate. They have the same channels of operation from north to south internationally. People don't realize that. This is the difference between knowledge, skills, and abilities to do a job and be able to oversee not only what's happening with our state and local law enforcement, but our international trade. And I can go on and on. This is what we're bringing. We're talking about replacing career politicians with a career American that has a resume to do the job. And I love that you brought it up, that there is a correlation between letting this tax and spend, these bad decisions, continue to hurt our citizens, to make it unaffordable to live in Washington State. And now people are leaving our state by the truckloads. It's wrong.
Well, they're leaving our education system as well. They're also not just going over to Idaho. They're moving all across the country. And actually, we have a decent sized dual citizenship with Canadians that moved here, went to college here, found a job, raised their family here. They're leaving a lot of these municipal government areas because they're afraid because of the crime rates, the sirens constantly. And then they see these revolving doors. And, you know, a lot of people blame law enforcement for crime on the streets because there's a crime and they call them and they don't show up. That's because they're busy arresting the guy that they arrested 2 weeks ago that has a laundry list. I'll never forget the most prolific criminal in Spokane. It was a few years back, and I was reading a local newspaper article that he was arrested and released again. The individual was arrested and convicted 222 times, and he had a laundry list of misdemeanors, but a number of felonies, 222 times. Why is there a release?
There shouldn't be. And so there should be accountability to those prosecutors and those judges. I've written on this on my website, birdforgovernor.com. You can go to my Solutions with Actions. It's Law and Order Solutions with Actions. And at the very top of the list, I talk about a solution of actually holding them accountable, giving them a rating. I call it a public safety rating for these judges and prosecutors who are in elected positions. If you continue to have that revolving door that is costing the lives and the safety of our citizens, your rating is going to be in the toilet, and citizens are going to see that. And when you come up for re-election, they're going to say, you are not the person that we want to elect. Secondly, that is still not enough for some of these judges or prosecutors. Well, then we're going to look for a legal basis to remove you from office, just like DeSantis did in Florida. Enough's enough. If you swear in to uphold the laws of Washington State and you are failing to do so, you are now in countervention of the law. And as governor, I will find a way to remove you from office because you are now a public safety menace.
Yeah, well, and it's some of the judges, I think that they are making bad decisions, that their ideology is just like, you know, New York that now has military basically in their subway system because they don't have a bail law, right? There's those bail reformers out there that basically just want to do the catch and release forever and ever. Amen. Except for it means that we're just going to have nothing but criminals on the streets. And it's not like we have to arrest the whole community. It's a small number of people that are committing most of the crimes, and most of it is, like we talked earlier, tied to drugs and other kinds of organized crime. So when we look at that, the state legislature has put some things into place, but some of it was at the behest of our governor. Like our governor did an executive order right when he got into office years ago to get rid of the death penalty. And liberal institutions, I think it was Columbia and Harvard, did a study that having the death penalty on the books deters murder rates by 1 in 10. So, you know, it's obvious that if there's a consequence, you don't do the crime. And so, you know, below the murder rate, right? We're just looking, I'm looking at this Spokane just a couple weeks ago, a stabbing happened. Okay, it was domestic violence. It was a bad deal. The person was injured, did not die, but the guy was released like the next day. Stabbing.
Yeah. Murder's up 95% in Washington State. So what point in time are we going to see it for what it is? We have to enforce our laws. And that what you're talking about in those studies, this is B.F. Skinner's theory of operant conditionings. Negative enforcement, negative reinforcement, that means simply you commit a crime, we hold you accountable so that others and you understand you will no longer get away with it. You will pay a price. Therefore, you will learn, well, maybe I'm not going to do that again, right? Touch it, it's going to burn. So don't touch it again. And you feel the sting of our state's institutions, of our law working, and our law enforcement being supported by their governor. This is something that's coming in 2025 when I swear in. First thing that's going to be there is that resolution honoring our law enforcement officers of our state, making sure that they know that their back is covered by their governor, that they can get out there and do their job, that they will be protected. We're also going to bring back community policing. So communities know that those law enforcement officers are there to protect and to serve. We're going to build those partnerships in communities. We're going to make our communities safe again.
So one of the ways we make them safe, so some of that problem, I'm going to bring it back to the Spokane area. I know that this is a statewide office, but a lot of our listeners are in the region, and the region kind of relies on Spokane County and the city of Spokane. And we had a jail built back in the 80s. And the taxpayers, this last time around, we had a bond that we were going to vote to build a jail. But they didn't, like, double the size of the jail, even though the size of the county has doubled and the size of the city has doubled since 1980. They were adding, like, I don't know, a few hundred beds or something to the jail. So it's been that long. We actually had a jail built back in the 1980s, not by the local taxpayer in a bond. It was built by state government, because not only does our jail service the city, the county, there's also federal beds, but the state also uses it because our state prison system is not designed for people to be there less than 365 days. So what are your thoughts on working with local communities so that there actually is space in the jail? Because one of the problems I think that judges are facing, getting back to the judges, is that there's no room in the inn. And they're trying they're making decisions in the Spokane County based upon the most violent criminals that they think will reoffend. And that's why they're letting everybody go. And it's pretty obvious, like you said earlier, if you invite the crime, if there's no beds, but they put it on a loudspeaker, somebody's going to hear it. And we know that we have a revolving door because there's no room in the inn. But at one point in time, they said, we're not going to investigate property crime because we just don't have the resources. Well, guess what? It goes to property crime rates.
Yeah. No, well, that's exactly it. And so for the state passes laws and measures that cost county and county taxpayers the money at the end. When we're talking about corrections and correctional facilities, well, Spokane went through it last year, I believe. They had a measure because of the issues. They don't have enough capacity for the criminals that they have.
And maybe the Climate Commitment Act.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, if the voters get rid of it with this initiative that's coming up, the money that they've already collected with the Climate Commitment Act, I think that the voters would agree that the best way to improve our climate is to keep criminals in jail. Anyways, we got about 1 minute left, so I want you to do a parting shot for the listeners. I know I've drug you down I don't ask easy questions. I apologize. But I want to give you a moment to tell the listeners why they should be looking up Semi Bird at birdforgovernor.com and why they should vote for you come primary season. So last minute's yours.
Yep. I think this show just exemplified that. We went down a numerous rabbit holes and I went right after you. And then I started digging another hole within the hole, because the difference is I'm not a career politician. I'm applying for a job. I research, I know, I learn, I've done this, been there. It's time to bring someone with the experience to do the job. Look at the governor position, not as another career politician position, but as a position that you want someone to get in there and do work to get it done, and someone with the knowledge to make it happen. So you know where my mindset is. This is what people can hear. You know what my mindset is. It's a mindset to bring tax relief, to plus up our police officers with universal reciprocity of licensure. So you can come in from San Antonio, Texas, and become a police officer in Seattle within 90 days, you're on the streets. There's so many different solutions that we have written on that we're ready to execute on day one. We are going to bring accountability, and we are going to restore power back to the citizens of Washington State, because the position of governor is a servant leadership position. I will work for the citizens of the state, not the other way around. We're going to bring common sense governance back based on the Constitution of the United States and restore the concept of a constitutional republic right here back in Washington State.
Well, folks, that's Semi Bird. I kind of hit hard with him today. Normally when people running for office come on, I start a little lighter so we can get to know who they are, but I kind of know where Semi Bird's at. We've talked. I've heard him speak before. So go ahead, look him up. It's birdforgovernor.com. You've got a decision to make come election season. All that being said, we'll be with you folks again tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are sponsored by Right Spokane Perspective LLC and made possible by advertisers you hear and contributions from listeners like you.